Dr. Kenneth Gangle has stated that management is getting things done through people. The study of management from a scientific point of view has received more attention in recent years than perhaps in any other single period of history. The emphasis now is on the development of a theory of management which will be operable in all aspects of managerial work, including business, education, industry, and church work. Management, like leadership, is related today to the behavior of groups in which management is exercised. But what is management? Ordway Teed gives a couple of workable definitions. He says that management is the direction of people in association to achieve some goal temporarily shared. And again, management is the inclusive process integrating human effort so that a desired result is obtained. Both definitions are obviously based upon the democratic concept of leadership, since management cannot be divorced from leadership technique. On the other hand, when compared with an understanding of leadership, management seems to put more emphasis on the task, whereas leadership places more emphasis upon the person. A transactional approach of this dualism is that proper management involves leadership of persons toward a given task. We understand that we could also even use the word administration as well as the word management. Both are concerned with the formulation and execution of policy. Perhaps it will be of some help here to distinguish two other words which are closely related to the concept of management and administration. One word is the word organization. The word organization has to do with the setting up of the total task in its various aspects, particularly denoting an emphasis on planning and structuring the activities of the program. Supervision places the emphasis upon the leader's guidance of persons within the framework of the task which they hold in the organization. Therefore, it might not be improper to say that a leader organizes the task, then supervises group members in the function of those tasks. Administration and or management are words of more general character which describe the total process of the leader in relationship to the organization which he or she serves. Along with Teed's definition stated above, other approaches to describing the administration-management process have been offered. Here are some samples. The stewardship of the talents of the people of God has entrusted to the leader's care. The purpose for bringing together of the means and the end. Not the directing of things, but rather the development of people. The work that a person does to enable people to work most effectively together. Creative management is the opposite of custodial leadership. The creative manager seeks new solutions and does not base his decision-making on tradition or on present or standard controls. He steadfastly resists slogans and cliches which destroy initiative and bog down ideas. He applies himself to the total task in full recognition that most people in the organization already view management as a necessary evil to be tolerated but never liked. He combats this misconception with the dynamic of his own leadership and a full awareness that management is not only a necessary task for the organization's functioning, but also a glorious ministry to which God has called him. The creative manager makes sure that all organizational workers recognize that the managerial task is a supplement to and not a substitute for the supernatural working of the church as an organism and an organization. There are certain qualities that a manager or an administrator should be developing. From the many characteristics which could be named, Teed selects five which, in his opinion, most clearly define the necessary elements of management as personal performance. Here's a quote from Dr. Teed. "My own studies of personal administrative qualities stress the need for sheer physical and nervous vitality and drive, the ability to think logically, rationally, with problem-solving skill that gets to the point more quickly than the average, willingness to take the burdens of responsibility for executive decisions and acts, the ability to get along with people in a sincerely friendly, yet firm way, and the ability to communicate by voice and pen in an effective manner." Notice how T's emphasis again stresses the significance of leadership qualities in a focus on the importance of the individual in the managerial process. Along with the personal qualities and abilities defined by Teed, the manager must recognize the enormous amounts of time which will be spent in what often appear to be more mundane aspects of this task. He or she must have time to talk to people about problems which are of great concern to them, but may seem very small when compared to the responsibilities which he, the manager, bears. He must be prepared to serve on and lead committees which play an important role in the functioning of the organization. And above all, the manager must have time to think. The importance of initiation and the creation of ideas is foundational to creative management. And since the first law of brainstorming indicates that quantity of ideas breeds quality in ideas, the manager must have time to produce the quantity. The emphasis on creativity in management suggests the value of listing some characteristics or administrative creativity, most of which can be developed by those church leaders seeking to be better managers and administrators. The following 10 are generally recognized qualities. First, there should be a sensitivity to one's surroundings. The wise manager will be one who notices people, places, events, and the little things that the average individual would pass over. Secondly, there should be curiosity. The effective manager was probably the kind of boy who continually wanted to investigate a cave or take apart a machine. Curiosity is the handle on the pump of ideas. And then there is perspective. Unlike the child who can draw a dog larger than the house in which its owners reside, the focus of the manager has to see things in proper relation to each other. And then there's mental flexibility. The progressive manager is an open-minded individual. He listens carefully to other viewpoints and considers their value. And then a manager should have an organized mind. This is the emphasis Teed is making when he talks about the ability to think logically and rationally. The organized mind can outline well. It sees things in symmetry and parallels. And then the manager should have a tolerance for ambiguity. The untrained man in the lower echelons of the organization can afford to jump to quick conclusions and be satisfied with simple answers. The executive, however, must not make matters categorical and concrete too soon. A willingness to let one's mind dwell in the abstract consideration of difficult problems is essential to satisfactory decision-making. And then a manager needs independent judgment. The creative manager is willing to buck the crowd, as it were. Often he stands alone on his nonconformity, bolstered only by the dreams of what he believes can happen in the progress of the organization. Then a manager should have a pride of workmanship. A willingness to assume responsibility carries with it the willingness to tack one's own name to a job when it is completed. Pride of workmanship demands giving one's best on any job simply because it will reflect upon the one who did it. In church leadership, the further implications of this include a commitment to advance or deter the name of Christ by the outcome of one's work. And then a manager needs the ability to synthesize. Because of his mental flexibility and the organizational ability of his mind, the manager can boil down and summarize both problems and answers. He then, of course, must be able to communicate the conclusions verbally to subordinates and peers within the organization. And then the manager needs the ability to reason and abstract. At heart, the manager is a philosopher as well as a programmer. John Dewey once said, "There's nothing quite as practical as a good theory." Though he may always appear to be caught up in the mechanical running of the organization, the manager spends a great deal of time in abstract reasoning as preparation for the nitty-gritty decision-making and supervision, which are a part of his everyday task. So here are at least 10 qualities of a good administrator or manager. He must be sensitive to his surroundings. He must have curiosity. He must have perspective. He must have mental flexibility. He must have an organized mind. He must have tolerance for ambiguity. He must have independent judgment. He must have pride of workmanship. He must have the ability to synthesize, and he must have the ability to reason and abstract. There's certain aspects of management, which, of course, we've already mentioned some, but I think we can certainly add to this. Teed suggests 10 elements of management which are generally recognized by students in the field of managerial study. These 10 elements are planning, organizing, staffing, initiating, delegating, directing, overseeing, coordinating, evaluating, and motivating. These elements of management are backed certainly by biblical examples. Consider their implementation in the administrative task of such God-used leaders as Joseph, involved in the economic administration with the problems of the famine in Egypt, or Moses, employing religious administration in the giving of the Levitical laws and ordinances. Consider Joshua, a general involved in military administration in the conquest of Cana, and certainly Solomon, called of God to the task of architectural administration in the building of the temple, as recorded in the book of 1 Kings. These 10 aspects of administration are sometimes viewed as stepping stones in the total administrative managerial task. Actually, the administrator, though we may look at these 10 tasks as a stair step with one task on each step, actually the administrator is involved in most of the 10 all of the time. While directing one project, he may have another on the planning board and still another in the evaluation stage. Also, the order is not as quite as neat as it may appear. The motivation stage of the given project may have to precede the staffing stage, and coordinating directing may go hand in hand. Perhaps it is safest just to say that these are 10 categories into which most of the manager's work can be placed. It becomes essential, then, for the manager to understand each of them and how they relate to his particular ministry, whether pastoral or departmental. We also understand, as we think of a manager, that the manager is certainly going to have an institutional role. The church leader, as administrator-manager, is not only concerned with the smooth functioning of the organization, but also with the development of all personnel under his authority. He constantly works with people, and though he may not have a specific classroom situation, of course many administrators do that as well, he is involved from day to day in an informal instructional process which makes him in reality and in many ways a teacher. How is it possible to have the responsibility for the achievement of tasks within the organization and yet still maintain a satisfactory relationship with the personnel to serve them in an institutional capacity? This pinpoints one of the difficulties of leadership, namely the achieving of desired results while still retaining calm, collected, satisfactory tone and individual satisfaction initiation within the group. The problem, that is, dissatisfaction perhaps, or satisfaction, the problem of a satisfactory authority without being a dictator is a common one when the leader finds himself in this role. Teed considers this role so important that he devotes an entire chapter in The Art of Leadership to this particular approach. In a terse paragraph near the beginning of the chapter, Teed writes this, "The good leader, one has to conclude, is a good teacher. His role is like the teacher's in helping followers through experiences which bring a changed mind and a changed motive. Emphasis upon this view of his task would be helpful if for no other reason than that it keeps to the front the complete difference between leading and bossing. A good teacher is never a boss. He is a guide helping to start and hold the student's interest toward mastery in a particular field. And this is no less true of a leader." Teed's chapter further delineates quite specifically the principles that followership will be forthcoming when the lead have been brought through experiences like those of the leader, which cause them to develop some of the basic conclusions that he has. Here again, the picture is one of the leader representing a consequence of the needs of the group. The leader is no longer some kind of symbol or myth, but rather one who can function in response to group goals. Teed refers, as he continues his discussion in management, he refers to the organizing aspect of the manager's task. And he says that this organizing aspect is an executive's work. To quote, "It remains true that in every leadership situation, the leader has to possess enough grasp of the ways and means, the technology and processes, by means of which the purposes are being realized, to give wise guidance to the directive effort of the whole. The emphasis here is on a coordinating responsibility, which works itself out in the construction of charts, the planning of approach, the formulation of working principles, and the integration of all working groups. Satisfactory management depends upon effective organization. The organizing phase of the leader's work precedes other administrative duties, such as staffing, supervising, and delegating. When properly organized, these aspects of the work are facilitated and administrative performance is possible." Now, it's important to recognize certain principles of organization, which should be followed by the manager as he conducts himself within the realm of his responsibility. Though worded differently by different writers, the following principles are generally accepted. Organization is not an end in itself. To develop organizational charts and to plan programs for the church's ministry, just to delight in the result of one's labors, is a distortion of the role of organization and leadership. One of the diseases which can be contracted by leaders is drafting boarditis. The symptoms are quite common. The patient spends a great deal of time in his office poring over books, charts, plans, and programs which have marvelous aesthetic value, but never find their way to an actual ministry with the people. So organization is not an end in itself. Organization should always grow out of a need. The whole ministry program, including objectives, emanates from a recognition of the needs of people which the program serves. It's obvious, therefore, that the organizational development is inseparably related to the needs of our people. By the same token, it is important to say that the organizational structure should be designed to accomplish established objectives. So organization is not an end in itself. Organization should always grow out of need. Organization should contain maximum participation in the division of labor. The ministry or the program of a church or Christian organization does not belong to the pastor or the director of Christian education or the official board or the CEO. It is a program of the people, by the people, and for the people. The wise Sunday school superintendent, for example, will utilize the departmental superintendents by involving them in any planning sessions for the Sunday school. The division of labor relates specifically to the process of delegation, which is certainly discussed many times in managerial studies. Organization should also be flexible. The church or Christian organization should not be interested in the development of spiritual robots. There's no need for the leader to lay down the mantle of his own thinking or take off the shoes of individual initiative before he enters the church. since the program of Christian ministry set up years ago will probably not meet the needs of today, organizational flexibility should allow for necessary changes in that program to achieve more satisfactory and adequately the goals which are laid out for it. So organization should be flexible. And then organization should be democratic in procedure. All that has been said previously regarding leadership style is applicable in regard to the organization's democratic procedure. Autocracy hands down orders from the top and expects that they will be obeyed, whereas democracy allows for open discussion of issues and a genuine choice by the people involved. And then I think we should say that organizations should develop creativity in individual workers. Far from stifling the individual initiative, proper organization finds ways and means of drawing out the creativity of individual workers. Organization should include job analysis and job description. A job analysis asks the how, why, and what of all tasks in the organization. The five general methods of gathering information for a job description. First, there are interviews. The leader sits down with the person who is performing the job and discusses the various aspects of him with him. Second, there are questionnaires. The questions must be constructed so as to produce accurate information about how the job is performed. Thirdly, there is observation. The person charged with the developing of the job description watches the individual worker on his task and records his observations of job function. Then there's the job diary. The worker keeps a diary, time-structured record of what he does, how he does it, and the results achieved. And then, of course, there would be external research sources. Job descriptions in various ministries are becoming more numerous, and various sources can be consulted for information and assistance in constructing a job description for the various programs. We find also that organizations should recognize and utilize the proper organizational channels. A violation of organizational charts, line staff relationships, and span of control can never produce satisfactory functioning of the program. In order to utilize proper channels, all the personnel in the organization must be aware of the relationship which they sustain to other workers, both above them and below them in the line of authority. Organization, in addition, should include requirement of records and reports. The superior is always accountable for the actions of his subordinates, and each person should be accountable to only one superior. The superior is responsible to secure from his subordinates a written record of their achievements and activities, just to preserve and evaluate. Such reports must be regular, complete, specific, and neatly prepared. Organization should include clear channels of communication, both oral and written. When communication in an organization are functioning properly, all personnel receive the information they need in order to do their job. Effective communication includes positive not only the sending of the message from the top down, but also the reception of feedback from the bottom up. You encourage your people to communicate effectively first by setting the example, by being a good communicator yourself. The second step is to set a policy which will draw attention to good communication. And then the third step is to back up your policy with an effective management reporting system. This brings us to the end of number 3.